Washington's economic blockade of Cuba, lift the U.S. travel ban, normalize relations with Cuba, respect Cuba's self-determination.
For three consecutive years, the General Assembly of the United Nations has voted to condemn the U.S. economic blockade of Cuba. On October 21st, as heads of state from around the world gather in New York to celebrate the U.N.'s 50th anniversary, and on the eve of President Clinton's address to the U.N. General Assembly, we will march for an end to Washington's economic war against our neighbor. Speakers will include Angela Davis, Dennis Rivera, Ramsey Clark, and Lucius Walker.
March to end the economic war against Cuba. Saturday, October 21st, 12 noon. Assemble across from the United Nations at 42nd Street and 1st Avenue. That's Saturday, October 21st, 12 noon.
This has been a public service announcement by WBAI on behalf of the October 21st Cuba Coalition. For more information, call 212-227-3422. 212-227-3422.
You're tuned to Hi-Fi, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
Pencil.
Okay, this is Joe Franklin broadcasting on radio station WBAI.
It's 99.5% all natural and preservative free, WBAI FM in New York.
I love this radio station.
And a very good evening to everybody. It's 8 o'clock, it's a Tuesday night, and in case you don't know what this is, it's the program that has moved from Wednesday nights, Off the Hook. Stay tuned.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. But if they could, they would. For Billy Bond for the best effect for worse. I hope that's understood. But Billy Bond.
Broadcasting live from the Empire State Building in New York City, this is Off the Hook, the program about all kinds of computer hacker-related issues, internet, the telephone company, consumer issues, Big Brother, and the future. This is Emmanuel Goldstein, and Fiber Optic is over there on the other side of the room. How you doing?
Hi.
And yes, we were just mentioning off-air that there is a new intro on the way for this show. What you're listening to right now is the old intro. Well, it just faded away, actually, but we do have a new intro that's in construction right now. It's actually being made overseas. It's cheaper to make intros overseas. I don't know if you know that. And so we're having it built over there, and it's going to make its way over here at some point.
So you're keeping a pretty tight lid on what exactly. You're keeping a pretty tight lid on what exactly this new intro is.
Well, yeah. In fact, to make things even safer, I don't even know what's going to be on it. Somehow I was able to work that out with myself, where I don't even remember what I'm doing. So, yeah, the new intro has some interesting things on it, but I don't even know what they are. So you can torture me, but I won't be able to say anything.
It's kind of like the SAT answers, hermetically sealed in a safe in Albany.
That's right. That's right. You know, you never find out in the SATs just what the answers really are.
No. Nope.
You're just told that you got something wrong, or that you, you know, you're this smart or this this dumb or whatever, but you never know what you got wrong. It bothers you for the rest of your life. And that's the way it's supposed to be. Anyway, we're here tonight to with a special two-hour debut in our new time slot, Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. Feels different, doesn't it?
Yeah, feels earlier.
I'm up much earlier than I usually am.
Yeah.
It's 26 hours earlier. We figured this out last week. 26 hours earlier than the usual time slot, which was Wednesdays at 10. And tonight we're on for 2 hours, sort of a special kickoff edition. And, of course, we'll be taking phone calls with all kinds of questions, input, adventures, stories, whatever people might have as far as net-related stuff and telephone company things. We've been following over, I guess maybe for all the new people out there that perhaps have been tuning in for the first time, we might want to do like a sort of a wrap-up of the last few years, because we've been on the air now for several years. I don't know exactly when the first show was. I seem to recall we started doing this back in 1989. I'm sure there's people out there that are diligently keeping records as to what exactly we're doing, so maybe they can help us out as far as when the first show was. But we've been, over the years, covering quite a few interesting stories. I remember back at the very beginning, the big story was the Frack magazine, the emergency 911 quote-unquote program, which actually was a document that anybody could obtain for about $10. Craig Neidorf was taken to court for that for about, I think that was the summer of 1990 he was taken to court, and he was facing prison time. It's unheard of at the time. He was facing prison time for publishing this document, which was referred to in the media as a program that could disrupt the 911 mechanism of phone companies around the country. That gave us a taste of how the media would distort things over the years. Fortunately, the government dropped the case against him, but he still had to pay all this money for court costs, which is a phrase I've always had trouble with. So that was the first major thing that we dealt with. Then, of course, Fiber, there was your story, which I guess sort of unwound over the air throughout a couple of years here and culminated in you being sentenced to a prison term last year, period from January to around November, where you were sent to federal prison in Pennsylvania. We covered the whole thing on the radio, and we talked to you live from prison there. Have we ever even figured out what it was you were sent to prison for after all this time?
Yeah, it was... something along the lines of conspiracy and computer trespass.
Yeah. But again, as far as the actual specific, that was always so nebulous and vague.
Yeah, it was rather vague notions, as long as they were certain I did something.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry, that was me. So we brought a lot of people into the fold in that particular adventure. You know, a lot of people sort of went to prison with you in some regard, both online and over the air. You got lots of mail from BAI listeners, and of course, when you came back, it was a big festive occasion. Then, earlier this year, another one of our friends and writers for 2600 Magazine, which is the hacker magazine that we all kind of do stuff for, Bernie S. was apprehended, I guess, in a parking lot of a 7-Eleven. He was making some sort of a transaction with other people. Actually, it was a van filled with black people, is the way that it was described. And so the cops down there in Pennsylvania figured it had to be a drug deal because, you know, people just don't do anything else in that situation. So they went over and they questioned him. What they found was that Bernie S. was selling these people in the van some chips. There's nothing wrong with selling chips to people, at least not last I heard. Actually, that could very well be different now. He was selling chips that... could be implanted into a Radio Shack tone dialer, which would turn that Radio Shack tone dialer into a Redbox. Redbox being the device which makes the phone company think that you put a quarter in the phone. Using that device, it was our understanding, is what is illegal. You know, using the device to make free phone calls, making the free phone call, that is when you break the law. However, the government has recently, and by recently I mean about a year ago, expanded the laws to include having the device, having equipment that could be used in any way to do something fraudulent, that's illegal too. Having information, having software, having hardware. And this is what the Secret Service kicked in Bernie S.'s door for shortly after the local police searched his car. They went through his house, they went through his person, they found software and hardware and things that, if used in the proper manner or improper manner, could defraud phone companies, could clone cellular phones, say, things like that. There has never been any evidence or any allegation that Bernie S. did anything with this information except share it. However, that is now enough to put somebody in federal prison. Bernie S. has been in federal prison now since March, and he is scheduled to be sentenced a week from today. He has pleaded guilty because the way he described it, technically, he did break that law. The law is crazy. The law says that if you possess this particular instrument that can make a beep, you're in violation. You've committed a felony. Just possessing it, having software which can do that, is also a violation. So, crazy as it sounds, he was forced to plead guilty because had he pleaded innocent and then been found guilty of that particular crime, he could have gone to prison for a lot longer. The way it stands now, he has already served the maximum amount of time he could have been sentenced for, having pled guilty. So I believe next week, a week from today, Bernie S. will finally be out of prison. He has been calling us live on the radio. However, we won't be hearing from him tonight because we just want to wait till the sentencing is over, just so that there's nothing else to complicate his life. I do know the Secret Service was very upset with the fact that he was on the air here, and they tried many different ways to get him off the air, but none of them worked. But in this particular case, I think that's probably the smartest thing. Barbara, what do you think of the whole Bernie S. saga?
Well, I think in light of recent events, he's probably better off if he committed murder.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's. I guess that could be. Allegedly, though.
Allegedly.
To respect our
and a double murder at that.
By the way, let me just issue a warning at this point. Any callers that call in and mention a certain subject that's being mentioned everywhere else in the world will be cut off. Okay, this show is not about that. We're not even going to say what that is. We all know what that is, but we're not going to mention it, right? Because we're better than that. We have our own, world here that we stay focused upon. There's no need to bring in these outside influences and act like everybody else. So, this is Off the Hook, a program that deals with hackers, technology, and the future, and Big Brother, and surveillance, and all that kind of thing. You know? All right. So, we just talked to Bernie S. today, in fact.
Yes, we did.
He sounded pretty good, didn't he?
He sounded to be in good spirits, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think is going to happen next
week? I'm hoping that that he gets time served.
Mm-hmm.
Based on what his sentencing guidelines are, I think he said 2 to 8 months, I believe.
I think so, yeah. Now, maybe you can explain. We all become experts on sentencing guidelines. This is something that hackers didn't used to know about, but now we all know about this whole point system. Could you explain the point system?
Well, vaguely from what I remember, there's various points are given or taken away. Obviously, you want as many points taken away as possible to put you in the lowest level of the sentencing guidelines.
So most people listening right now would probably be, what, 0.0?
Well, if you're not...
We're not being sentenced.
If you're not charged with anything, you
don't
have any points at all.
Okay, we have no points. So yeah. The average citizen has 0 points.
Yeah, you want to have all 0 right. points throughout your life.
All right,
yeah.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
Keep the clock at 0. All right.
But if you were charged with a particular crime in the federal system, then you would accumulate points mm-hmm. based on what it is you're accused of. For example, more than minimal planning, having committed the crime, is worth a certain number of points. And all these points basically add up. And points can be taken away based on things such as, what was it? That thing that that everybody does.
If you acknowledge responsibility?
That's it, okay. Yeah. The acknowledgement of responsibility.
I.e. pleading guilty.
You can plead guilty and not really... See, they consider it if you're remorseful.
Mm-hmm.
If you're remorseful, even if you plead guilty, if you're remorseful and you acknowledge that you did something wrong and you accept responsibility, that acceptance of responsibility, if I recall, is worth having 2 points deducted.
Okay, so you get 2 points off if you're remorseful.
Yeah.
That's the most you can get off.
For acceptance of responsibility, yeah.
Okay. And those points are not transferable?
No.
Okay. If you have some points left over, you can't give them to another person.
You don't gain interest or anything like that.
Okay. It's important that we get this straightened out because a lot of people are new to this, you know.
Yeah. We're
going to be thought of as federal criminals. I think we should all know how the system works, you know, that way we can figure out ways to get as little points as possible.
Yeah, there's a nice little booklet that lots of lawyers have.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the sentencing guidelines booklet.
Now, that's only federal, though.
Yeah, I don't believe it works that way in state.
Okay. Now, how many points did you have?
Gosh. I forget exactly how many points it was. I remember I was level 12, mm-hmm. however it added up. Maybe the level is the sum of the number of points. I forget exactly how it worked out.
Okay.
But
you were sentenced to a year and a day because of that.
Yeah, level 12 is 10 to 16 months.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that if the judge would go below 10 months, then he would probably get a lot of arguing from the prosecution. And if the judge would go beyond the 16 months and go actually above and beyond the sentencing guidelines, then, of course, you would have the option to appeal, I suppose, provided that you didn't agree to that you wouldn't appeal.
Well, a lot of the power seems to be taken out of the judge's hands. He has to stick to certain guidelines.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he doesn't really have to do anything. He can give you more or less, but he's sort of bound to stick between the range of the guidelines.
Now, as far as Bernie S. goes, I think he's got between 6 and 8 points. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's what he said. And,
right. It sounds to me almost like the points equate to months, because you had 12 points, you got 12 months.
Well,
looking
no,
at 6 months for him, and he's got 6 points.
It doesn't necessarily come out that way.
All right, but so far it seems to.
Yeah. Well, if he was, I think he said 2 to 8 or whatever it was, and he's already been there for almost six...
He's been there over six. He's been
over
there 7 months.
He's been in
the
seven months.
I should point out, so those people aren't familiar with this case, he's been held in federal prison with no bail, as if he were some sort of a terrorist, and this is for carrying around some, or not even carrying around, it was in his house someplace, an instrument that can make beeps. You know, that's what we're talking about here. Now, if you're listening for the first time, you think that we're crazy for talking about this. We're talking about point systems, and you know, we don't sound like the kind of people that should be dealing with prisons and things like that, and you know, sending people away with no bail for having little boxes that make beeps. Yeah, it is crazy. That's the whole point. That's the whole point that we're trying to bring across here, that we've been bringing across for the last few years. And you know what? It's getting crazier. It really is. The amount of control that the federal government seems to want to have over its citizens is scary. It really is. Things like the Clipper chip and the digital telephony bill that we've been watching over the years are really quite frightening. And this latest push to control encryption is something that I think we all need to keep an eye upon. That's what we're going to be doing in this show in the weeks, months, years ahead. And let's hope we have some good news, because there's been a lot of bad news over the past year or so. A lot of movement backwards, you know, where we feel like we just have no power. But that's where a place like BAI comes in, because we do have power here in numbers by listening together, by focusing our resources on particular objects and things like that. We have some more bad news. I mean, I don't want to get people really upset here, but you do need to know what's going on. I don't know if many people listening now were listening a couple of weeks ago, but we had a guest on who was dropping by from Holland, who goes by the name of Bill SF. Bill SF is probably one of the most knowledgeable people as far as the phone systems of the world that I can imagine. You can drop Bill SF in a country that doesn't even have a name someplace. He'll go to a phone and he'll figure out how to make that phone call wherever he wants to make it call. He'll know what kind of switching technology there is, what kind of signaling they use, and he'll know how to build things. And, you know, this is not something that that is bad. A lot of people will say, oh, someone can build things, they're dangerous. Yeah, you can use it for bad purposes, but what Bill has been doing over the past few years has been some very good things in Holland, helping out the Holland Internet Providers Access for All. And basically what transpired a couple of weeks ago was that Bill came back to this country because he had been away for quite some time. Bill was involved in something that some of you may have heard of back in, I think, the late 80s. It was called the BART scandal. And BART is the Bay Area Rapid Transit System. We've written that, haven't we?
Sure.
Yeah, it's they have that little... It's not like the one they're trying to do here, which I think is falling apart. Maybe we'll have some info on that later. But the Bay Area Rapid Transit System uses a little magnetic strip. You put it into the turnstile, sucks it in, and then immediately makes it go out the on the top, and prints out on the ticket how much you have left, which is always nice to know how much you have left. Unlike the New York system, which you're supposed to look at the magnetic strip and somehow know. So what happened was he and I believe it was Captain Crunch that and maybe one
well,
other.
Well, they were at his house.
Yeah,
wasn't really involved with it.
Captain Crunch being the grandfather of phone freaks, I guess. They had figured out a way to duplicate the cards. And, of course, they, as most phone freaks and computer hackers, they didn't make very good criminals. They weren't able to keep it quiet for very long, and pretty soon the whole world knew that they had figured out a way to make fake BART cards. And so they all got in trouble for that and were sentenced to various times in various prisons. So what happened was Bill was out on probation, and he really wasn't very comfortable where he was. a lot of restrictions. I mean, you're on probation right now, Fiber.
Yeah.
And I know that a lot of people that are on probation, not saying that you are, but a lot of people tend to be hassled in various ways. A lot of restrictions, a lot of checking up. Some people have to have drug tests all the time. Some people are always having their location checked out and their employers visited and things like that. And I think Bill was in a situation like that where he just didn't feel like his life was his own anymore. So he decided, and it was a very big decision to make, to move to Holland, where things are a lot more open and free, and where he could actually play with technology without fear of repercussions, and where he would be welcomed, not only by computer hackers over there, but by ordinary people as well, because Holland just tends to be like that. People tend to listen to what phone freaks and computer hackers have to say, because sometimes we're the first ones to get there. So Bill moved over to Holland in 1989, and he's been living there ever since. And I visited him a couple of times. It's really quite amazing the kinds of things that he does. You know, he builds phone systems and sort of hooks the whole office network together and things like that. And he's revered over there, let's put it that way. So he came back a few weeks ago to visit his parents because he had not seen them ever since he left back in 1989. And, he went out to California shortly after appearing on this show 2 weeks ago. And he was in Berkeley, and he had some sort of a run-in with cops over there. I don't really have many more details than that, but what it boils down to is that they ran his name, they found out he was technically a probation violator, and now he's in jail too. And we don't know if he's going to get out anytime soon. He should have been back in Holland by now. He's being held here instead. It's a very sad situation. What I'd like to do now is just so people can hear, in case they didn't hear the first time, the last things that he had to say on this radio station. That way you'll know what the voice of Bill SF sounds like, and also the kinds of things that he was into. This is his commentary on the recent Church of Scientology raids in Holland. You may have heard of this. The Church of Scientology were able to orchestrate a raid on the Access for All headquarters because they had been serving as an anonymous remailer, and they had passed through some information that the Church of Scientology thought was copywritten or restricted in some way. And so in this way that they seem to be doing recently, they sought to shut them down somehow. They've been trying to do this to the whole Internet in various ways, Usenet news groups, Netcom, the anonymous remailer in Finland, and now the anonymous remailer in Holland. And this is something that really angered Bill SF, because I guess anytime you step on someone's freedom of speech, it's something that we should be indignant about, and Bill certainly was. Anyway, let's listen to the last words he had to say on the subject.
What
stands? Tell us where it stands.
Where it stands, I talked to Niels, who is one of my housemates out there, and he said that that basically Scientology is, I can't say the word here in the States, it can in Holland, but Scientology has been totally made to look like dirt. Okay. The Dutch government is going to make moves and is moving rapidly to revoke them of their status of being a church.
Mm-hmm.
And forcing them to pay all back taxes.
Wow.
Watch out, Scientology.
That is something. And I also,
you are about to be had.
I also heard that was the Fisher affidavit, that document thereafter. That's all over the net
now.
It's
all over.
They can't stop
you're
it.
You're all over Scientology.
Wow. Okay, well, I
you
guess
dare
that's,
not touch me.
That's what happens when... All right, those are the last words from Bill SF. Hopefully Scientology will stay out of this, but you never know. We'll keep you updated when we hear more from him and his situation. Okay, let's take a look now at some of the things that are happening around the globe. There's always all kinds of technical mess-ups and foul-ups and blunders and things like that. We've experienced a few, and there have been quite a few over the past few weeks. You hear about the thing that happened with pagers?
No, what thing is that?
Where all the pagers... Well, when I say all the pagers went off, I don't mean they beeped. I mean they didn't go off. You know, they shut them down. For some reason, the pagers stopped working. Okay, you didn't hear about this. A lot of people
nope.
didn't. Basically, according to according to the news item, the Houston Chronicle, let's look at that one. The shutdowns were caused when a data entry clerk mistakenly forgot to enter a carriage return when he was entering in the receiver codes into several paging company's satellite uplinks. So, according to this person who works, I believe, in a hospital, our PageNet pagers were out of service from about 11:30 p.m. Tuesday night to 11:30 a.m. Wednesday. This is last week. According to an Associated Press news article today, this was actually about a week ago, a technician at Spacecom, the satellite carrier, accidentally disabled thousands of satellite receivers. Apparently, the receivers had to be restored individually. The story indicates that five of the national paging companies use Spacecom. And the way it works, this is how it was described on Telecom Digest over the Internet. When you send a page, the signal gets relayed to a large number of local sites, which then feed it into local transmitters. While this is designed for the semi-national coverage, it's often the way your neighborhood paging system works as well. Your satellite pager does not get a signal directly from orbit, but rather via a terrestrial relay. So they shut down the local receivers by remote control. Problem was, they couldn't restart them the same way. This could be due to two reasons. A, there was a complete shutdown, so the receivers didn't get the turn-on signal. After all, they were off. And the second reason is pager transmitters are designed so that a group of them spaced perhaps 10 miles apart all go off simultaneously. Although it flies in the face of everything I know about radio, they can and do set off multiple transmitters to ensure usually that the signal covers the wanted area. This requires ultra-precise synchronization. It's quite possible they were able to turn the units back on but did not have remote sync capability. And that comes from some contributors to the Telecom Digest. Did you hear of anything like this happening?
No, but I'm kind of shady on how this could possibly affect people that don't have satellite pagers.
Yeah, well, I imagine it probably only affected them.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
But, again, how do you know? I mean, how do you know if your pager wasn't working? It's not always going off, you know? You don't know when it's not going off because it's just impossible to tell.
Yeah,
you can't pick it up and listen, see if it's there.
Unless you hear from somebody that...
I'm always hearing people saying, oh, yeah, I was beeping you all day yesterday. I'm like, yeah, right.
Yeah, but then again, if the transmitters were off, most intelligent pagers say out of range.
That's true. Some do. Some do, but not all.
Yeah.
Okay, the London Underground is fighting to clean up its computer systems after one of its own trainees hacked in and posted an offensive message on the digital displays located above two platforms around the capital. How many of you have been to London? Okay, in London... they have this system, and I think they should have this in New York, but of course they never will, where they have a little digital display over by the platform. It says, next train going to this location will arrive in 3 minutes. And I guess they have sensors or something that tell it how many minutes away this train is, because as it gets down to 0 minutes, sure enough, you hear the roar of the train, and there it is. So you always know how long you're going to have to wait for a train and where it's going. So, computing can reveal that on... August 16th, a message appeared on displays at Piccadilly, Elephant and Castle, and Regent's Park underground stations declaring all signalmen are... Is that a word I can't say? It's a British term that begins with W.
Wanker?
Yeah. Well, you just said it.
No, you could
say
that.
Yeah. I can say wanker. Okay. Because that might be the most horrible word that I've ever... I've asked around a few people, and I said... hey, you know, you're a wanker, and they didn't hit me, so I figured it's not a bad term, or in this country.
Well,
but
it's not
there,
here, no.
Over there.
Yeah, over there, it's
be the equivalent of saying jerk off.
Uh-huh. You can't say that.
You can't say jerk off?
Yeah. Well, I know what wanker means, but I'm not going to go into the details as to that. Anyway, okay, so basically the message was instead of saying the next train to Elephant and Castle in 3 minutes, it said all signalmen are wankers. The message went unnoticed by tube staff for more than 12 hours before being removed. There were no complaints from the thousands of commuters, but despite being cleared, the message reappeared on tube station displays on August 29th. A full, 13 days later. 2 days later, London Underground staff were called in to locate the problem. The message had apparently been saved onto the system and was randomly generated at a later date. A London Underground spokesperson told Computing Magazine, when we train people, we usually take them around on an induction course. It seems one of the trainees obviously had more experience than the others. He managed to hack into the computer, bypass the input codes, and put a message on the dot matrix displays. He added the reappearance of the message was due to a technical glitch and not a deliberate action. The trainee is no longer an employee. they take swift action over there in London. That can never happen here because we don't have displays like that. All right. What else has been going on? Well, there was a problem with Netscape. Now, perhaps, Fiber, you can tell us what was going on with that.
Which sort of problem?
Okay, there are actually two. I'll go over them one by one. Two Berkeley computer science graduate students interested in cryptography identified a serious security flaw in the Netscape software for browsing the World Wide Web. Netscape says a repaired version was sent out almost immediately afterwards. That was according to the New York Times. It involved a weakness in the use of a pseudo-random number generator to create the crypto seed. Knowledge of the weakness enables the key to be reverse-engineered with significantly less than exhaustive effort. That's according to the Risk Digest. Is that one of the ones you're
familiar with? Yeah, well, there's actually three things. The original thing was the initial discovery and weakness in the fact that the public domain version of Netscape that most everyone uses, mm-hmm. The key that was used in supposed secure transactions, that's when the little key closes on the bottom.
Okay.
On the bottom left corner of Netscape.
Why would you be using that?
Lots of companies want to actually get into commerce on the net, allowing people to feel secure about buying items, doing shopping on the net, and supplying credit cards, which otherwise would get transmitted in the clear. So if the key in Netscape closes, in theory, using something called the secure socket layers, which is an implementation of secure communications in Netscape between the browser and the web server, that the transactions would actually be encrypted. Okay. And the first problem was that in the browser everyone was using, this key was only 40 bits long, whereas in the commercial version it was 128 bits. And this key could be predictively and exhaustively searched in not a very long amount of time.
Uh-huh.
And that was the first thing that was done. The second thing that was done, as you mentioned, was that these two people from Berkeley figured out that the random number that was chosen to generate the key for these transactions was not so random.
All right.
And that was strike two. Strike three, most recently, was not anything having to do with encryption, but that if a URL, that's the Uniform Resource Locator, which actually is the address of something on the web.
We call URLs.
Yeah, URLs. If URL was made purposefully very long,
mm-hmm.
then two things could be made to happen. First thing that could be made to happen, most obviously, is that someone could create a link on a web page with a URL that's extremely long that would crash the person's browser.
Okay.
That in and of itself is obviously annoying. The second problem related to that is that what's really happening is you're overflowing the stack.
Mm-hmm.
And time and time again, this keeps coming up. If you can overflow the stack in a particular application, you can cause the machine that's running the application to execute commands against its own will.
Now, we've seen that in Mail. We've seen that in Netscape.
We've seen that in the Internet Worm.
Just overflowing the stack. That seems to be the secret.
Yeah, it's the key to everything.
Isn't there a way to stop that?
It's called balance checking, but it's usually the culprit is sloppy programming.
Yeah.
And I grabbed the newest version of Netscape that came out, which was, I think, called 1.22. And the URL that everyone was using to test, that was just a really, really long one. You can't actually type one that long. You have to actually click on a link so that the URL is sent directly to your browser to look up. But the URL in question that previously crashed Netscape no longer does. So either the bug was fixed or they simply made the buffer bigger, so you just have to send a longer URL. But I didn't actually test that myself.
Okay, well, that does seem to be what the problem was. So, Netscape users, beware.
Yeah.
Kinds of weirdness is happening on the net, but, you know, that's part of the growing pains of the Internet. We see things like this all the time. We have to kind of deal with it. One thing, though, that I'm kind of leery about dealing with, that's the whole encryption issue, which we mentioned before. And this is very disturbing. I'm not sure if people have heard about this. According to an article in Communications Week International, the 34-nation Council of Europe has agreed to outlaw strong encryption products which do not make keys available to governments. The article is called Euro Clipper Chip Scheme Proposed. It's on the front page of the magazine's September 18th edition. It says that the policy was approved on the 8th of September at Strasbourg by the Council and coincides with an attempt by the European Commission to propose a pan-European encryption standard. The Council, unlike the Commission, has no statutory powers to enforce its recommendations. However, according to the chairman of the committee that drafted the document, it is rare for countries to reject Council of Europe recommendations. The proposal would make telecom operators responsible for decrypting traffic and supplying it to governments when asked. It would also change national laws to enable judicial authorities to chase hackers across borders. It's pretty scary, don't you think?
Yep.
I mean, this is not just about hackers. This isn't about chasing. I mean, they throw that in there to make it seem like they're just trying to catch computer hackers. But when you outlaw encryption, you're basically saying, you know, the government reserves the right to invade your privacy whenever they want. You know, if somebody opens your mail, you know, the mail that goes to your home address, to your P.O. box, you can generally tell. You see that it's been opened. And you can get angry. You can do something about it. You can at least be aware of it. However, on the net, that's not really possible, is it? So it's a lot more difficult. And it's just very easy for something like this to be abused. I hate to bring up house analogies, but in this particular case, I think it does hold because we're talking about private information, you know. And if you have private information, personal things about yourself, you don't want someone to have the ability to read that unless you trust them. If the government went around and said, hey, we need keys to everyone's home so that, you know, we can just come in and if something's wrong, we can take care of it, I don't think very many people, Republican, Democrat, whatnot, would agree to that because we all have a sense of privacy. And that's why this whole clipper chip proposal kind of fell on its face a couple of years ago. But what's disturbing is that we're seeing it being adopted in other countries. The first was Russia a couple of months ago. And the funny thing was, it happened in Russia shortly after the FBI had done a little presentation over there to try and convince them. And yeah, they were convinced. They did it. It's now in place there. Now apparently other European governments are following. So pretty soon, most of the world will be outlawing encryption. So what's going to stop us from doing it? So it's very scary, very sad, and something that I think is really unenforceable. How do you do that? How do you enforce something like that? How do you tell somebody?
Hard.
Yeah, I mean, if you have strong encryption that the government does not have a key to, are they just going to assume you're a criminal?
They'll probably just draft some law where it states that mere usage is illegal.
Or mere possession, like with the Bernie S. case.
Yeah.
The encryption itself will be like having, you know, a device that makes beeps. It'll be as dangerous as that.
Possession of encryption tools.
It's almost like I'm living science fiction here. You know, I don't know what's going to happen next. All right, how about one more story, and then we'll maybe take some phone calls?
Yeah.
Okay, because we want to hear from some new listeners out there. Our number is 212-279-3400. This is Off the Hook. This is our new time slot between 8 and 9. However, tonight we're doing a special 2 hours season premiere. So feel free to give us a call if you have any questions or feedback or things like that. And just remember, we're not talking about you know what. All right, this is something which I think is incredibly silly, but happened nonetheless. New methods of voting designed to replace the traditional polling place and ballot box are a regular topic of discussion in various forums. The method being discussed usually involves voting by phone or by computer. Now, get this. The state of Oregon is experimenting with a new voting method, but is using a technology that may be older than the voting booth itself. And that technology is the mail. Yeah. Senator Packard's replacement, who will be elected on January 30th, will be the first member of the U.S. Congress ever elected in an all-male election. Well, that's a phrase I wouldn't want to say too many times. All-male election, yeah. Okay, ballots will be mailed out to all registered voters a few weeks before the election date. Voters fill out the ballots in their own home at their leisure. You can do it at 4 o'clock in the morning if you want to. That's the beauty of this. They can then either send them back through the mail or take them in person to a designated drop-off point. All completed ballots must arrive by January 30th. Oregon has used all-mail elections before for local elections with pretty good success, but this will be the first time it has been tried in a statewide election. No one claims to fully understand the risks involved, so people will be watching this election very carefully. Election officials like all-mail elections because they don't have to set up any polling places or find people to run them. Most think that voter participation will increase. The potential for fraud is greater, but most officials seem to have enough faith in the general public that they are not worrying about it. The timing of campaigns will definitely change. Any last-minute media blitz is useless because most people will have already voted. Now, I don't understand how anybody can say that they don't fully understand the risks involved. I mean, this is a piece of paper. There is no way of checking to make sure that you haven't already voted. I mean, what safeguards do they have in place for that? You could run off your own copies. You could duplicate pretty easily, unless they're doing something like American currency, which is also duplicated. But if they're going to that much trouble, maybe that's how they're preventing fraud. Or what's that?
They're using some sort of punch card or Scantron.
Okay, well, if they're doing something like that, then all of a sudden anonymous elections are gone out the window because they can figure out who it is that voted for who.
True.
All right, so that's you have an opinion there.
Yeah, I'm probably the only person in the room who's voted both by affidavit ballot and absentee ballot in the state of New York.
In the same election?
No, different elections.
Okay, that's good.
What an affidavit ballot is if you insist that you've registered and they have no record of it at your polling place, they give you a paper ballot and an envelope, and what you do is you fill out the paper ballot, which is relatively simple example of printing. It's very easy to counterfeit. That's nowhere near as complicated as paper money.
But they give it to you there.
They give it to you there.
You don't take it home.
You don't take it home.
Right.
And you sign the back of the... they give you a blank envelope. Mm-hmm. You put the affidavit ballot in the regular envelope, in the blank envelope, put that inside another envelope. You sign the back of it.
Right.
They only open this if the election is tight, if the number of affidavit and absentee ballots is larger than the gap between the two. And supposedly, they're supposed to compare the signature to your signature on the rolls, mm-hmm. if and when they find it, to make sure it's you.
Well, now this is a situation, though, where 100% of the votes are going to be done in this way. So obviously, it makes a bit of a difference. I just wish we had some listeners in Oregon, because I'd like to get one of these ballots and figure out ways of making our own, you know. And that's not to say that that's what we want to do, but you see, this is where the difference of you know, thinking like a hacker and being treated like a criminal comes into play, because obviously everybody is curious as to how it's done. Everybody wants to know how you can possibly make this whole system fall apart. And it seems to me this is relatively easy to do. You know, all you have to do is, I mean, even if you go around to all your friends who don't want to vote and collect their papers, or you simply get it out of the mailbox or whatnot, it's very simple. Very simple to vote many, many times. Nobody will ever find out. So it seems to me that that's pretty apparent what the risks are in this case. I hope there's no mail voting around here anytime soon. But we'll keep our eye on things like that. Okay, our phone number is 212-279-3400. And this is our first show in our new time slot. So let's see who's out there, see what kind of new listeners we have, or if any of the same listeners have made the switch. Do you think the first call will be Rebel again?
I hope not.
It probably will be, because he always manages to be the first call. So let's see if he's going to be the first call this time. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, a magical.
I don't believe it. How does he do it? How do you do this? For one thing, the central office times out after a certain amount of time, so you would have to have been hung up on if you were calling all this time. I don't know how you do it.
No, I'm just kidding.
I don't understand. I think he's like sitting out in the hallway somehow, and he's just taking over the phone line.
Well, I'm going to give out my new email address.
You're going to give out your email address over the radio.
While people are getting their pens and papers out, and...
Yeah, I'm sure there's a mad rush to stationery stores right now for people that want your address, but...
Well, I'm going to give my new email address, but before I do, I just want to make a correction that the last time I called a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. I had mentioned that you can dial 10999 and then 0 the area code and number, which will connect you with LDDS Metromedia.
Right.
I mentioned that you can make free phone calls by going to a COCOT and telling them to bill it to the phone you're at. As of last week, they do not do that anymore from any phone.
Well, probably because you announced it on a 50,000-watt radio station in New York City.
And I saw the movie Hackers twice. And
when
I saw the movie the second time, there was only 3 people in the theater.
Uh-huh. Well... I can offer various theories as to why everybody else might have left, but...
What do you mean left?
Oh, you mean you didn't stay for 2 showings?
No. I saw two different things.
Oh, okay. I thought you stayed for a second time and people saw you there and said, no, let's go to the other theater. And okay, no, my mistake.
It's not doing very well, that movie, but I still liked it.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but most movies aren't doing very well. Most people are, you know, a crowd of like 10 people in a theater these days is considered a lot for a film that's been out more than a week.
Well, all right, let's give out our new email address.
Yes, let's do that.
Okay, it is rebel at... escape.com.
Okay. Rebel at escape.com. And what should people be sending you?
Just anything. You could finger me.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Well, you know what I mean.
I think I do. All right, well...
And I'm having trouble with Netscape. When I try and browse a web page, it doesn't work.
Well, Fiverr, why don't you help Rebel?
Oh, gee, thanks. Well, what's the problem?
Well, all right. Let me just tell you. When I... Go and let me go into...
The sound of Rebel hacking live on the air.
Let me go into Escape Internet Tools, and I go to a thing called TCP Man, which is the trumpet...
Windsock.
Wait a minute. No. All right, here it is. Windsock. Now, I go into Winstock.
Winstock.
Okay, it dials. Now, is it supposed to be logging me in as ppp.rebel?
Do you know the... I think that's system
perhaps
specific.
We should have one of the escape
staffers. Okay, we have an escape staff person that flew by to answer this question.
Let's just field this one. The way it's set up at escape is ppp.the username in order to tell...
No, it doesn't work. I tried it. Look at setup command. I'm going to setup command.
Well, what you should do is call the escape office during their hours from 10 to 6, Monday through Friday, and talk to one of the nice people there.
Yeah, because your problem is with the escape service, not with WBAI and Off the Hook and all the people that are listening right now. But good luck. We wish you the best of luck with your endeavors on the Internet. You know, I guess that's part of the trade-off of, allowing access to the world, is that the world sometimes, you know, comes by and asks you all kinds of questions and things like that. Okay.
Somebody's got to provide customer service to the world.
Yeah, customer service to the
might,
world.
Might as well be us.
Yeah. All right, 212-279-3400. Good old Rebel. Good evening. You're on the air. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You're on the air.
I was just wondering how you guys feel about the current state of All 2600 News Group.
All 2600 News Group. Well, I don't know how many people actually read that, but interestingly enough, just this evening or last evening, I noticed that somebody had spammed it again and made something like 1,000 messages appear in the course of a couple of hours. All 2600 seems to be one of the most highly trafficked news groups ever to have existed on the net, which is kind of funny because when it first started, like about a year and a half ago, a lot of administrators said, oh, there's not enough interest for this kind of thing. The way I look at All 2600, that's how information is when it's unfiltered. You know, basically everybody says whatever they want to say, and probably 80% of it is nonsense or is untrue in some way. And then if you piece it together in some form, like, you know, with 2600 itself or with the Risk Digest or Telecom Digest or whatever, then you have some semblance of information which at least is a little bit more structural. You know, and that's I think that's what we see with this. It's, you know, All 2600 really is just a typical Usenet news group that's not moderated. How do you feel about it?
Well, when I first started about 6 months ago, it was the only information that I knew how to get, and it was a good source of information for me. But now, a little bit later, it's just become more of a hassle. And I don't know. I felt that 6 months ago it was pretty good, and it kind of irked me that it's in what it's like now.
Well, what do you think are the main problems?
Mostly, everyone complained after they saw War Games that all these new guys wanted to become hackers for no reason, and they just wanted answers. They didn't want to research problems for themselves, and now people are saying with the movie Hackers coming out that we're getting the same problem. But
yeah, it's a generational type of a thing. You know, hacking is never the same as it used to be.
Exactly. I mean, it's a shame, though, that people have to be so rude to other people. Because there is people out there that want to learn the correct way.
Have you ever been on IRC?
What's that?
Have you ever been on IRC, Internet Relay Chat?
I think there's the same problem in IRC.
Yeah, because if you're talking about rude and people that just want information and people getting kicked off because they ask questions and things like that, that happens all the time. But the advice that I can give you is that you should never take anything that happens on the net seriously, or it's certainly not the same as real life, you know.
Right.
If somebody, you know, slaps you around in real life, that's a lot worse than if they do it on the net. You know, the net is, you don't know if you're talking to, you know, to an 80-year-old grandmother or a 12-year-old kid. You know, it's basically everybody is equal and everybody can act like an idiot if they feel like it.
Exactly. I agree with you totally.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Sure. Take care. I guess, you know, part of the problem is the net is just, it's expanding so much that all these people that weren't part of the beginning, you know, the building of the net, are just jumping in midstream. And they expect it all to follow them.
Well, one big problem I see with news groups like Alt.2600 is that federal government, specifically law enforcement, is probably going to believe every single thing they read on there.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
I'm sure they do. Because they've come after people asking questions about all kinds of bizarre things that couldn't possibly be true, moving satellites and building explosives and things that people, you know, make up. But they don't know. They take it too seriously, which is exactly what I stress that should not be done. 212-279-3400. The program is Off the Hook. We're on the air at our new time slot from 8 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays. However, tonight we're going extra long. We're going from 8 to 10. So if you have any comments, questions, stories to tell, or anything else, 212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, I have three questions. One is, what do you think of Wired Magazine, which I subscribe to? And the other one is, I'm interested, do you have tapes of your shows? I'm really interested in the legal questions that you've been raising about people being arrested for what would seem to be, you know, rather, I don't know, I won't use the word trivial, but it seems sort of wild that a guy is arrested for something he has in his house and he's not using it. And
yes.
I'm interested in re-listening to what you've been saying or finding out more about this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the other third thing is, you had mentioned that there's censorship on America Online, and I wish you would talk about that a little bit more. So I'm waiting to hear your answers, and thank you very much.
Okay, thanks for calling. To start with, Wired Magazine, well, you know, Wired is not anything like a hacker type of magazine. It's kind of trendy, kind of into the whole cyber scene as it is. And I have no real problem with Wired. It's kind of fun to experience, although...
Except when you start turning the pages.
Well, when you start turning the pages, that's when some problems begin, because it's kind of hard to follow the text, because they have to be so snazzy with it, and sometimes that sort of outdoes the article in the first place. But there's a lot of people that like that, so, you know, to each their own. So I have no problem with Wired in that regard. Second, as far as the... what was the second one?
AOL,
right. AOL was the third one. Second one was the tapes of the show. Okay, yeah. We are working something out. We do have all the shows on tape, going back from wherever they started. We just have to organize them and come up with some sort of duplication service, and hopefully we'll have some nice historical records of all the things that have happened in the computer underground in the past 5 or so years. AOL. Is there censorship on AOL? Yes. Well, there is... not in mail, from what I understand. Is that correct? There's no censorship in mail. But there is, because they're not supposed to be reading mail. However, there's an interesting story about that, too, which I'll get to in a second. In the forums that they have on AOL, the conferences, if you use nasty language of any sort, and maybe, who knows, try using the word wanker and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that, you're told, you're warned, I think, once or twice, I think probably only once, not to do that, or you'll be thrown off.
Well, never mind nasty language. If somebody posts something really obnoxious and you respond to it and get into an argument with the person, AOL will delete the messages and give you a warning.
That's real nice revisionism there. That's kind of how...
never mind nasty language. You could just simply argue with someone about a point.
Uh-huh.
And if the AOL staff didn't like your tone of voice, then they'll delete your messages.
Now, we were told a couple of weeks ago, somebody had read this to us, that an AOL moderator had said... if you don't hear it on Saturday morning cartoons, then you can't hear it here. If that language would not be acceptable there, it's not acceptable here. So basically, we can refer to AOL as a Saturday morning cartoon of the internet, I guess. David, you have a input.
Yeah, I just spoke with people from Delphi and Internet MCI, and apparently when they start up their
brand new service,
mm-hmm.
They're going to immediately start filtering messages and content and not allowing certain things through.
Isn't that amazing how there's this need to control information?
Apparently, it's a paranoia about pornography, and they have their definition of pornography gets wider and wider. So,
yeah, that's the whole thing. Now, the interesting thing with AOL and involving the raids a couple of weeks ago, supposedly for child pornography, AOL let the federal government read the mail of suspects before the raids even took place. They just opened it wide open to them, and that's a pretty scary thing in itself. Jim, you have something?
Yeah, from CNN yesterday or the day before. Unfortunately, I didn't catch all of it. Apparently, someone who runs a scuba resort is suing AOL to learn subscriber names. On the forum dealing with scuba diving, people essentially disparaged his resort, and he's going to sue them. And in order to do this, he's suing AOL first to get the names of subscribers.
Okay. Well, there's millions of AOL subscribers.
Well, he wants particularly the ones that post that he's got the copies of the usernames. He's got copies of the messages.
Uh-huh.
All he needs is AOL to match them to a real person, an address.
Why doesn't he just email them?
Well,
you can email them and ask them who they are. You know?
They may lie and say...
Well, that's true, but that's the whole point of being on the net is that you can be anonymous. You know, being anonymous is not a bad thing. I'm not quite sure why people can't see that. I mean, I am sure why people can't see that. Being anonymous is something that, you know, the control freaks are very upset about because they want to know where everybody is at all times. Whew, we're moving into some rather scary times.
Well, speaking of control freaks, let's not to mention the situation with the Internet.
That's a good thing to mention now. Yeah. The Internic is that agency that pretty much controls all the names on the network, 2600.com, netcom.com, you know, all of them.
Right.
They're, you know, the EDUs and the nets and the govs and the mills, they're all controlled by the Internic, which up until now was what?
Well, just a little brief history on the NIC, as it was originally known as, the Network Information Center. The NIC was originally, not originally, but for a very long time was maintained by the Stanford Research Institute, SRI, in Menlo Park, California. And after they saw fit that it was growing at such a substantial rate, what they did was they separated the NIC as it was originally on the ARPANET, and they took it off the Defense Data Network and put it in charge of the private sector. And the company that was... it was originally handed over to AT&T, if I remember correctly, only temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when it first became the Internic. Then it was actually, for a while now, it was being taken care of by a company called NSI, which I believe stood for Network Solutions Incorporated.
Yeah. Right.
That company was fairly recently, over the past few weeks, acquired by a rather spooky company known as SIAC, S-I-A-C. And SIAC is...
S-A-I-C.
It's S-A-I-C?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, S-A-I-C.
That'd be SAIC.
SAIC?
I don't know, but SIAC, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, S-A-I-C. The people who actually make up this company, incidentally and strangely enough, are actually... people like the head of the CIA, the former head of the CIA, various former deputy directors and employees of the NSA.
Oh, better people to be dealing with.
As well as various military people.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And a lot of people see this as a first really vile attempt by the powers that be to take control of the net by seizing control of the very entity that's in charge of domain registration. And another thing that's interesting is that just before this happened, the NIC announced that the volume of domain registration was so high that they were going to start charging. So I don't know how they're actually going to organize this, but in theory, they claim they want to charge everyone who has registered a domain $50 a year subscription.
Yeah, I heard.
Now, where this money is going to be going, if the NSA and the CIA are now in charge of the NIC, along with the military... I don't know that if they really need $50 from every person that has registered a domain.
Now, we recently got a listing of all the .com domains.
Well, everything else as well.
Yeah, but just the .coms, and I think there's well over 100,000 of them.
Yeah, that was the biggest top-level domain is .com.
Now, you know, add all that together and put $50 on each one of those, and
yeah,
you got a tremendous amount of money every year.
Yeah.
And what do they have to do once you register your site? You know, it's basically they've done the work. They don't have to do anything else after that.
No, not really. I would just assume that also that they have to track down the address that that was given, the actual physical address, the mailing address of the mm-hmm. person who registered the domain, and a lot of them are fake addresses. So they'd have to like hire some staff to go through hundreds of thousands of registered domains to see which ones are real.
Right.
And I suppose they would attempt to cancel the ones that weren't registered with real info.
What do you think this is going to wind up going? Are they going to put an iron clamp on the net somehow?
Sounds like it could get really ugly, but what I the only solution I could see happening is maybe in the future there'll be all these islands of root name servers, and maybe there just won't be one anymore. I mean, lots of things could happen. There could be people running around as they are now with just phantom IP numbers that don't translate to any name address.
Well, one thing I think is certain, and that's that we've gone too far at this stage. Individuals have been running things for quite some time. We have a sense of what real freedom is through the net, where millions of people are able to talk uncensored to each other and not have Big Brother looking over their shoulder. This, of course, is very upsetting to the people that want to be able to control things, but I think in the end, you know, the individual will win out. That's the most important thing that we can all hope for. Otherwise, we wind up with a society like Singapore. And I think that's where a lot of us are heading. We'll be back in a minute or two, and we'll take some more phone calls then. But in the meantime, might be a good idea to think about this and what we can do to prevent it.
1, 2, 3, 4... There are no homeless, there are no poor.
And you're listening to WBAI New York. That's new from Big Audio Dynamite, song about Singapore. If the future looks like anything, it looks like Singapore. There are no homeless, there are no poor, and there are very few free thinkers as well. You know, I know someone just came back from Singapore a couple of months ago, and there's this shirt that they have that says all the things you can't do. You can't urinate in an elevator. I hear rumors that if you do, there's a sensor that closes the door on the elevator and calls the police. And so you're trapped there in the elevator.
So there's a urination sensor.
Something like that. And, of course, you can't throw gum in the street.
Right. You can't chew gum in the street.
Well, you can't
chew
gum in the street, which is what leads to throwing it in the street. But
I think spit.
You can have gum in Singapore. I think there is some gum allowance, but you can't do certain things like that. And
can't smoke in public.
There's all kinds of things, and you can just bet what they do on the net. You know, all kinds of controls they have over there. So, yeah, if you're into control, look to Singapore, and I'm sure you'll find all kinds of neat things, ideas. All right, let's take a look at the newest 9X thing. We got our 9X extra with all our phone bills. And apparently they're not making nearly as much money as they want to make with the dial-up service number. So they're offering it for free on like a free sample type of a thing. So if you call 1-800-INFO-PHONE, you can sample a wide variety of programs in each of the following categories. Exciting. Weather, sports, finance, lottery, racing, horoscopes, news, traffic, and time. We can sample time.
Wow.
So let's give a call. Got a dial tone there? Okay. Let's call 1-800-INFO-PHONE. Is that what it is? Yes. Of course, there's an extra digit in there. And its phone is spelled with an F. Now, I'm not going to dial the final three there. Let's see what we have.
Hello. Thank you for calling the 9X InfoPhone Information and Free Samples line. This call will enable you to hear samples of New York Area 976 programs or be transferred to a live operator for more information. Please be advised that these sample programs are for demonstration purposes only and may not reflect timely information. Please press 1 to hear samples of 976 programs. Please press 2 to be transferred to a live operator for more information or to receive a free 976 program guide listing all of the current 976 programs.
Wow.
Rotary callers remain on the line for an operator.
Okay, let's get a sample. 1.
For finance programs, press 1. For horoscopes, press 2. For lottery programs, press 3. For racing programs, press 4. For sports, press 5. For wrestling, press 6. For time, press 7. For traffic and mass transit, press 8. For weather, press 9.
Para programas en español, apresure 1-0.
All right, let's press 7 to get the time.
For exact time online, press 1. For time, press 2.
What does that mean? Exact time online? Let's try that.
For exact time online, press 1.
I just did.
Time, press 2.
All right, I'll do it again.
The correct time is 1:56:10 p.m.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, 9X. That's...
Correct time is 1:56:20 p.m.
Wow.
The correct time...
Okay, we get the point. You don't know what you're talking about. Okay, so that's a sample of the time. I guess he's just going to keep doing that.
This has been a recorded sample of 976-1000, the exact time, online. When you need the exact time, all the time, call 976-1000. That's 976-1000.
All right, but...
The exact time,
yeah.
Online.
All right, we got it.
If you would like to hear another sample from this category, press 1. To return to the main menu, press 2. Find out how to receive written information on 976 programs or...
Let's try another time thing.
For exact time online, press 1. For time, press 2.
Okay, let's do time. We'll press 2.
Don't be late. Call 540 Wake.
Oh, boy.
Or friendly wake-up call. Eastern Daylight Time, 4:50 and 30 seconds.
You know, how hard would it be for them to have the real time there, you know? I guess 9X doesn't want us to get the real time because, you know, you have to pay for that.
Yeah, time costs.
So we're not going to give you the real time. We're just going to let you hear what it sounds like.
540 Wake. And
do you think this time advances?
Time 4:50 and 50 seconds.
Okay, it's 4:50 now on this particular time thing.
New York temperature.
What we're gonna do is we're gonna call back in a few minutes. All right, it's 4:50 now, so we'll call back later and we'll see if it's advancing. And if it's advancing, I'd like to know why the Dickens they can't make the thing have the real time and make that advance too. You know, it'd be good for the people of New York to get free time. Just to be able to get the time, you know. Call the operator, ask what time it is. She'd be happy to tell you. Now they want you to pay 40 cents for it. Okay, that's the free sample there. 212-279-3400. That's just a local phone call. Give us a call. Good evening, you're on.
Hi again, it's me.
Oh, no. Now, wait a minute. You're on the same line again. I think you've canceled all the other lines, and somehow you've made this your own. All right, what is it?
First of all, when I was on the net, I do alt.2600. How come there are 1,000 things? Why is it, does it like...
Well, the thing is, if you had listened before, you would have heard that somebody spammed the news group last night, and there's about 1,000 worthless topics in there. So what I think you should do is go through each and every one of them and look at them to make sure that they're all the same. Once you've determined that, you should delete them one by one, not all at once, and by that time, you know, you should be old enough to collect retirement.
Okay, now how do you post... onto the alt.2600.
You want to post a message. What news reader are you using? TIN?
I think Elm or something.
No, Elm is your mail reader.
Oh.
TIN is your news reader. You're probably using TIN. In which case there is a follow-up. If you hit F, that'll allow you to follow up to a message that's already there. That's probably the easiest thing to do.
W to post a new message.
You could, yeah, say W to post a new message, and they'll ask you what news groups to put it on. You can post it in any news group you want. You can make the name rebel@escape.com be a part of every news group if you want.
And you can just
pay the consequences.
Your own news group called rebel.
You can't make your own news group.
You have to be a news administrator to create a news group.
Yeah, and I don't think you're a news administrator, are you, Rebel?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. Thanks for calling. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello. Oh,
you okay?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
My name is Mike. I live in Brooklyn.
Hey, Mike from Brooklyn. How are you?
Well, I'm just coming back to normal now. I am recently a survivor of the conspiracy between 9X and AT&T to drive you nuts when you order ISDN.
That conspiracy. Let's talk about that.
I made it. It's done. It took 1 month, but I lost the dial tone for 9 days out of the month. They couldn't find it. But now at the end of the month, I have it all hooked up. I went with PSI, and it's working pretty well.
You went with PSI, huh?
Oh.
Yeah, well, that was the confusion was that 9X and AT&T would not agree that it was available in this area, and there was a lot of buck passing.
Yeah, I know. Well, 9X has been having some problems recently. We'll talk about that in a minute, but... tell me, the kind of service you're getting from PSI. Now, you're not taking advantage of the 56K thing, are you?
Yes, that's what I'm doing. I'm taking advantage of everything.
All right. Tell us exactly what it is you're doing.
I use their configuration manager, and there's a little problem with that. This software for PSI came with Chameleon, which comes with the BitSurfer, and there's a book that comes with it. So after I'm banging on it, and I'm following the instructions, but I mean to the letter, I give up and I call support, and the first thing they tell me at support is that when you go to set up for ISDN, you don't set it for ISDN, you set it for PPP, regardless of what the book tells you. So that kind of like left me lost for a couple hours and forced me to call for help, which I didn't want to do, but I did.
Uh-huh.
And they told me, like, ignore the book, it's a version behind the software. Now, when you use the BitSurfer, you can't set for ISDN because it's not a card. The software looks for a card. So you have to set for the PPP. But once you set for the PPP, it goes in. And once you're in, You can do the bonding, anything that you want. But you have to understand that even though you're setting up for ISDN, you mustn't. You must set for PPP.
Now, wait a minute. What speed are you connecting at?
Right now, I'm going in at 57.6.
57.6.
That's the speed he's setting his serial port.
Okay, but you're not. You have to pay that penny a minute to 9X, right?
Yeah, right. I'm giving it to them for this month until I can figure out how to take advantage of everything.
Well, the problem is you're not going to be able to figure that out because if you'd listened last week, you would have heard our horror story with PSI where they told us that it was possible to do that, to connect at 56K and not pay the penny a minute with 9X. And that trick is basically what?
The trick is basically that you could complete a call as either a speech or an audio call and pass 56 kilobit data over the connection and thereby avoiding the penny a minute surcharge. Now, but PSI does not support this.
Right, but they didn't tell us this until after we had signed up with them.
Well, I'm glad to hear about this, but I got to tell you something. I really feel emotionally shattered after this month with these people, and I'm so afraid to touch anything at this point.
I can
I'm
imagine.
I'm so glad that the thing is working. I feel like I've been tortured.
Uh-huh.
I've relearned the fear of the mechanism again because of all the disappointments over the month. I think that it's going to take probably a week or so before I calm down and can really be relaxed with this thing so I can explore it. But right now, I'm so afraid to touch anything. It's been a nightmare. I'm telling you, it's been a nightmare.
It's something to hear you on this end of the spectrum, having gone through all this and kind of shattered by it. And then on the other end of the spectrum is Rebel there with his internet account, posting 1,000 messages onto the Usenet. I don't know. Between the two of you, I guess, is everybody else.
Well, I want to tell you, it's beautiful once it's working. Once I calm down, I'm gonna go in there and really have a good time with it. But it's been a nightmare. They don't have any service people who understand anything. And all that they do is they keep coming over and saying, listen, when we're done here, could you write a letter to this person and say that we were wonderful?
Oh,
but they never, like, get out fixing anything. It's just... They just sent supervisors to my house, like, for 2 weeks in a row. Supervisors, like, were sitting here eating lunch with me. And nothing was getting done. There was an argument of whether or not an ISDN signal can coexist with a regular analog signal. And because the dial-up number for PSI here in New York is just a 212 number, when they listened to it, they were telling me, no, that's not the ISDN number, and they wouldn't bring over a guy with the Tektronix ISDN reader until I changed the number that I wanted to use.
Oh, boy.
But, in fact, that number that they have for the dial-up, you can use it for analog or ISDN.
The thing is, yeah, you can, but with PSI, with the service you have now, you will not be able to take advantage of that analog, audio calls.
Yeah, audio calls.
Proper way to say it. They don't support that, so you might want to consider that. When
the other thing that they don't support is the alias. They give you this really hard to do... they give you a number for an identification for an identifier, and if you want to change that, you have to get a third party piece of software to change it to an alias, so you can get like a real username or a regular username. There are some things to be desired, but I guess they're coming along. Anyway, I'm sure I've held you guys up enough. Thank you for your time. I feel better just telling somebody that.
Okay.
Survived it.
Well, we're here for you. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for sharing. Take care. Oh, we're like a support group here. Now, why don't you update us on your ISDN?
My current situation is that I've sort of graduated into the category of wanting more features. And fortunately or unfortunately, 9X is has graduated into this category along with me, where obviously one would hope that they would have been ahead. But unfortunately, they're figuring out how these features are added at the same time I am.
Right.
So for the past couple of weeks, I've been trying to order features such as call appearances and three-party conferencing and so on and so forth.
What's call appearances?
Call appearances basically allow you, through simulating what's known as electronic key telephone service, what it allows you to do is if you have an ISDN telephone, or if you have an ISDN terminal adapter that you connect to your computer that supports custom calling features, which are known as supplementary services in ISDN lingo, call appearances would basically let you make or receive up to a certain number of calls. Say if you ordered 10 call appearances, you would be able to make or receive a combination of up to 10 calls simultaneously by putting people on hold, and obviously you could only ever talk to one person at a time.
Only one person?
Yeah.
Three-way?
If you had three-way, then that's a separate feature.
Okay.
Then you could talk to the person on the call appearance that you're talking to and then conference someone else in.
Now, why is it you can't bond them all together? Because they each one...
Because you can only actually talk on one B channel at any one time. The call appearances are actually managed at the switch.
So
you can only actually talk to one person on a B channel at the same time.
When you put them on hold, they're not still there on your line.
No.
They're back at the switch.
They're back
being,
at the switch,
being
yeah.
managed. Somehow.
Right.
Okay.
And you can have either three-party or six-party conferencing on ISDN.
Okay, so you can have six-way.
Yeah, there is such thing as six-way.
Is that very expensive?
I don't remember what the tariff was on six-way. I don't
I wonder
know
how you would manage that, because you hit flash now to go to three-way. What would you hit flash four more times to...
No, actually, it's...
You'd have to do something else.
You probably get... You probably flash and...
dial some sort of a code.
Yeah, most likely. Or, That's a really good question.
I think you should order that, too, and be in for another 6 months of hell.
But, now, the last word that I heard is, tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
I actually had somebody from Northern Telecom, give them a ring.
Northern Telecom's getting into the fray, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
I happen to be served by a Northern Telecom switch.
DMS-100.
Yeah.
Now, David, you had something on 9X and ISDN.
Right. A while ago in the CompDecomp.ISDN news group, I posted a message asking people to send me email about anecdotes about their installations of ISDN with 9X. Just recently, a couple of my friends had ordered ISDN, and they spoke to 9X business office personnel, and for some reason... They were directed to a third-party company out in Long Island to manage their ISDN orders. And from the two people I've spoken to so far, this has been a total nightmare, as our last caller had alluded to.
Yeah.
What I would like is, if you're out there and you've ordered ISDN from 9X in the last couple of months, I would like to get some reports, because I'm speaking regularly now to executives at 9X about this. Please send me messages to my personal address, david@david.com. And if you could just make the subject 9X_ISDN.
You got david.com.
Yes.
Unbelievable. So all the other Davids in the world won't be able to get that because you took it.
You got it.
Wow.
Well, I got it, actually.
All right.
But so please send me the mail, because I am speaking to these people on a regular basis, and they actually are acting upon some of the issues I'm bringing up to them.
Okay. Thanks for the input. Here's a nightmare story from Telecom Digest, and Fiber, maybe you can lend some insight on this particular problem. This person says they have, I believe they're on the West Coast, they use Pac Bell. We have 26 lines, residential POTS, and one ISDN line into our house. For the curious, we have an internet cooperative amongst 20 people. ISDN carries internet to my house, and then 20 modems take it all over town to the members. PacBell told us when we ordered our last three lines that we could only have one of them, and that we were then maxed out. Their story is that we've used all the pairs up on my street, except for the spares to each other house, and the allocation is from 1 to 5 pairs per house. I called the office on Monday to inquire as to the cost to get two more lines. I told them that engineering had told me no more unless I pay for trenching, etc. The lady told me there are 9 pairs to your area available and 3 available to your house. I found this hard to believe, but decided to test it and order the line, and she assigned me a number and date for install. And then an engineer came out and was rather rude with me, telling me that there's been a block placed on my address and that we can have no more lines. He said we can pay upwards of $10,000 to have the area rewired, even though I got a firm commitment from the business office. Kind of interesting. Have you ever heard of that kind of situation where they say you can't have any more lines?
Not in New York, I haven't. In fact, 9X, it might not be the quickest thing in the world. Obviously, Manhattan is really bogged down with orders, being the busy city that it is. But 9X is constantly running new lines. And the company that I used to work for, we ran out of phone lines.
Uh-huh.
And 9X came and chopped up the street and ran some more pairs.
Well, I know with a business, you can always get more lines.
Well, this was at a residence, though.
It was a residential line?
Yeah, it was actually a business run at a residence.
But was it a business line at the residence?
I believe they were business lines.
Yeah, because you have to pay more for business lines, so I think they give you more preferential treatment.
Well, they certainly didn't tell us that we have to pay for chopping up the street.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, when you're in a residence, I mean, there are residential uses for many phone lines. The way I understood it, you can get as many lines as you want as long as you pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if there are any kinds of restrictions on that. 26 seems like a pretty high number for residents, but who knows? There might be a good reason for that. I mean, like you're running a BBS or something. This has long been a point of contention. You know, a BBS is not considered a business. It's basically just for receiving incoming phone calls. There's no money exchanging hands in most cases.
Well, if these people in question are charging subscribers to connect to their BBS, then it is a business.
Yeah, it is a business. But really, what business is that of the phone company? What do you use your phone line for?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there are some advantages to having a business line. If you want to take advantage of that, then you do. And if you don't want to take advantage of that, then you don't. And there's certain areas of town that are offices where you have to have business lines. That's understood. You don't live there, so you can't have a residential line. But I don't think that the phone company should be deciding for people, well, this is a business line because you do this on it. You know, it's really, in your own home, I think you can do whatever you want. Jim, you have something?
Yeah, back in 93, when Esoteric Resources was trying to get some lines, we didn't want to pay for business lines, and we were told by the phone company, Ninex, here in New York, that per person you could only get three lines without paying for, if you wanted more than three, even if you had them registered or whatever you like to call it, in the individual's name, you'd have to pay as if it was a business.
Well, I think that might be that representative's interpretation.
Because yeah, perhaps.
I hear all different stories from all different people, and one representative told me very firmly that Ninex doesn't care if you run a business out of your home. It's really your choice. You know, if you're in a home, you can do whatever you want. You can have as many phone lines as you want. Okay, 212-279-3400. This is Off the Hook, a special expanded edition. Our new time is from 8 to 9 on Tuesdays, and tonight we're on until 10 o'clock. And here's a little story talking about irresponsible behavior. McMaster University in Canada. The computer services group continues to use the student number as logon ID and email address in spite of the fact that many professors post grades, quote-unquote, anonymously using student numbers as the equivalent of the Social Security number. Imagine having that as your logon ID. People just keep extending the boundaries for privacy invasion. It's 25 minutes after 9 o'clock. Let's take some phone calls. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, hi. I'm so glad to get through. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Okay, I have a question for you. I sent you a letter a few weeks ago, but I guess it got lost in the shuffle. I'm trying to dial, like we have 900 numbers. I'm trying to dial some 0891 numbers in England.
Oh, that's going to be difficult. Yeah, it's the equivalent of a toll service over there, right?
Yeah, but I'm willing to like pay for the cost of the call.
And lots of people over there are willing to pay to get to an 800 number. You know, a lot of people over in England or France or somewhere want to call an 800 number over here. They have no translation for it, but many times there's just no way to do it because they can't figure out how to bill you. You know?
So you don't know any tricks?
Well, the only trick I could think of is to find somebody in England that has a two-line phone and is willing to front it for you, and will simply connect you and will dial for you.
So you don't know any access codes or anything that I could do it directly?
As far as I know, that's blocked from all countries except that particular country. You would have to do it from within there. And certainly there are ways of tricking the system and forwarding it. Of course, if you have a blue box and you figure out ways of routing, I'm sure Bill SF could go on for hours about that, but unfortunately he's not available.
Okay. Thanks for your time,
man. All right. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
You ever call an 0891 number?
No, I never even heard of them.
Well, it's like 900 numbers.
Oh, okay.
So you can't call a 900 number from England.
Yeah. What would happen if somebody here called the England direct number?
You'd get a British operator.
Yeah, and she wouldn't be able to connect you to those numbers?
You know, maybe she could. Maybe she could. Do you have the number for UK Direct?
No.
Let's see if...
you should be able to get it from...
800 information, yeah. Well, let's see if that actually works. 800 information, one of my favorite numbers.
800 Directory Zane.
Hello, I'm trying to find the number for... I believe it's called UK Direct. It might be England Direct.
A moment.
Thank you. Bum, bum, bum.
Nothing either way, sir.
Really? It's the service that allows you to call England Direct and get an operator over there? You've never heard of it? It's through AT&T.
Yeah.
Might be AT&T UK Direct or something.
Okay, let me try that.
All right.
No, I don't show it. So let me give you a service assistant. Maybe she knows how it is.
Okay, thank you.
Service Assistant, Mrs. Christopher.
Hello. We're trying to find the number for a service called UK Direct. It's it allows you to call an operator in England.
UK Direct. No, I don't find anything under that name, sir.
Really? It's you don't have a service run by AT&T that...
Same.
Sorry? It's like USA Direct, except it's not.
That's the name of it, or is it actually called the Ukraine Direct?
No, I don't think it's called that. All right, I'll look it up somehow. I'll find it. Thank you. Well, I guess that's pretty much what we should have expected.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what it's really called, but I thought they were all familiar with
it. I have a whole list at home.
I have that
actually.
List, too.
Yeah.
We all have that list. We don't have that list here. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, maybe one of our trusty listeners.
Yeah, a listener might want to try calling AT&T customer service. They most definitely have it.
Yeah, there's a special number that they have that, you know, where they're knowledgeable people from AT&T.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they have all those numbers, and they can talk intelligently about it. But unfortunately, I don't have that number
Isn't
either.
Isn't that 800-FIND-ATT?
No.
No?
I don't know what that number is. Find ATT.
Yeah.
Why do you have to find them?
Well, it's,
they're always
it's
there.
Various information.
I don't think so. Do you want me to try that?
Well, I mean, I'd tell you to try customer service before I told you to try
I'll
that.
I'll try that. I'll try that. 1-800-FIND-ATT.
Yeah, that number sticks in my head.
Let's see where this takes us.
Thank you for calling the Find AT&T Center, an easy-to-do-business-with initiative and service for AT&T employees only. Our hours of operation are 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
It's illegal for us to call this.
Through Friday.
Must have been from one of my past adventures.
If you'd like to leave a message at the tone,
uh-oh.
We'll return your call on the following business day. Please leave your name, area code, telephone number, and details of your request. The Find AT&T Center is not equipped to handle external customer referrals or callbacks.
That's us.
And is not an employee locator service. Please refer to your regional intercompany directory for the employee locator office telephone numbers. Thank you.
Well, I think that's about enough rejection for one night.
Yeah.
All right, let's take some phone calls. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling back and just asking if I gave you like one of these 0891 numbers or another type, would you be willing to like give it a try?
We'll give it a try, except we don't have the, you know, do you know what we're talking about when we say UK Direct?
Yeah, I know. It's just right. For a second there, I thought, well, yes, like, well, what is a typical number? I could give you two numbers.
Give us one or two numbers. Are you on the net, by the way?
No.
Okay, if you were on the net, you could post this question to Comp, Decom, Telecom, and you get an answer in a shot. You would.
You give me a computer, and I'll do it.
Well, that's a mighty tempting offer there, but I'm not sure.
All right, let me give you two numbers. Here's both of these are for nightclubs in England. The first one is 891-919-621.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the other is the famous club, the Hacienda in Manchester, and that's a different code. It's 336-404-960. So that last one is not a 891. It's a 336, but they're both billed at what they call 39 pence a minute cheap rate and 49 pence a minute at all other times.
So wait, 336 is another premium
yes.
service? I wasn't aware of that. I knew about 891, but not 336.
Yeah, it's a new one.
Okay, well, we'll see what we can do.
Okay.
All right, good luck. I don't know. If we had that number, we could try it.
Yeah, well, we can still call AT&T customer service, you know.
Yeah, and waste a lot more time with them.
Well, okay.
If someone wants to go outside into the hallway and call them, that's fine with me, but I think, you know, we put our listeners through enough trying to get through AT&T. They can do that, you know, anytime. You know, we've all called AT&T and been put on hold for 10 minutes.
Fact,
you don't need to hear that on the radio.
The listener should call us with the information.
That's right. Well, if he was able to call us right back like that, I'm sure, you know, people can get through with the information. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
All right. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. Right now, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I've been listening with great interest to your discussions of ISDN, and just wanted to ask if you could to sort of step back from your own experiences and perhaps give some insight on the options that people looking for internet service providers with ISDN service might be choosing from, and on the equipment, the hardware that we might be choosing from.
Well, the equipment we've been experimenting with is the Motorola BitSurfer. That's one of the things that we've been playing with. And are you located in New York?
Yes, I am.
Okay, there's lots and lots of service providers in New York, and quite a few of them offer ISDN. I know Escape has ISDN. Do you know
Escape
others?
Does. The Internet Channel does.
Are you familiar with a outfit called Walrus.com?
Walrus.com. No, I
haven't
heard,
heard of them, though.
No, I have not heard of them. Why, are they in the city?
Yeah, they're down in the financial district.
Okay. And do you know if they have ISDN?
Yeah, they do, and it was and I'm just going on the resources that are on the web. Do you have more to say about PSI?
Well, I mean, just to sum up, our problems with PSI stem from the fact that they told us one thing and then it turned out something else was true. The thing that you really want to do, unless you're a mega corporation and can afford all kinds of things, you want to be able to avoid that ridiculous penny-a-minute surcharge that 9X puts on ISDN connections, and you do that by simply having what's known as an audio call where you're able to push up to 56K on a single line.
Yeah.
And I just read that PSI is offering $29 a month up to two-channel connections with their usual, at the same rate as their usual 28.8 or lower.
You know, this is something kind of funny. We had signed up with them, and I think we paid something like $500 installation fee, and we're paying $250 a month. They send us this little advertisement right after we do that saying, hey, there's never been a better time to sign up for ISDN. Our rates are cut in half. And, you know, you've already signed up for a year's contract. You can't take those rates. So they're sort of like mocking you and rubbing your face in it and saying, if you had only waited a couple more weeks, you could have saved all this money.
But doesn't that indicate that this is the coming thing? And over the next year, you'll see a lot more competition. If you're paying through the nose for a 28.8 connection now.
I hope so. And I also hope that a lot of the smaller companies get into this because they're the ones that can really offer you good deals. I mean, as far as what we were trying to do with the 56K connection, you know, the people at PSI were when they finally figured out what it was we wanted, they were acting like we were asking for something bizarre. And this is something that, I mean, Fiverr, you've been doing this for months now.
Yeah, months and
it's
months.
It's not a problem. It's not a big deal. And anybody that knows what they're doing can provide you that service. So you can connect, you know, to Internet via ISDN and not pay the penny a minute surcharge and be connected to 56K. It's not illegal. You're not cheating anyone. You are using the resources in the way they're supposed to be used.
Also, another note on that is if you actually live close enough to an Internet service provider, that, say, for example, you're served by the same switch, you could actually, if the company is smart, if they offer ISDN, what they could do is set up their ISDN dial-up lines to be on Centrix, and they could add your ISDN line as part of their Centrix group.
That's a really good deal.
And if that's the case, you can actually connect it 64 kilobits, 128 kilobits, real data
call. It's considered an internal call.
Yeah, it's considered an internal call, and there's no penny-a-minute charges.
Is that something you think will be likely to you'll be likely to see providers go into the trouble of doing?
If they're smart, they will because they're getting business that way, and it's a minor thing for them to do, but it's kind of innovative. But if they're smart, they will offer that.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Okay, take care. Yeah, these are definitely interesting times. You know, we're sort of forging ahead through unexplored territory here with this whole ISDN business. 212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, Dan. I have one question.
Listen. You've exceeded your maximum time on this show. I'm sorry. Maybe for all time. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, my question is, what are the three-digit numbers that when you dial on the phone, you get the recording what phone number you are calling from?
You mean your automatic number announcement thing.
It starts with letter with 9, but
yeah.
What are those two other digits?
958 should do it. Are you in New York?
In New York, yes.
Yeah, 958 works from just about everywhere.
958?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay, hang up now and find out your phone number. Good
much.
Evening, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, I called before. I forgot to ask you, I was so excited.
Uh-huh.
I'm interested in getting an ISDN phone since the BitSurfer doesn't allow the caller ID.
Actually,
interesting.
Well,
you should mention that.
Funny you should mention.
We just had an adventure with caller ID and ISDN.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, in fact, if you're serviced by a DMS 100 switch, and if you don't know this, you could find out from
National.
Well, you can also find out by probably calling your exchange plus 9901. They usually tell you.
Yeah, but
switch.
In a lot of cases, they only say that it's digital, like
yeah.
DS0 or DS1.
Okay.
But, well, in 100% of all cases, you're going to be a national ISDN1.
Uh-huh.
What you want to find out is if you're on a 5ESS or a DMS100 switch, which are the two most prevalent switches. If you are served by a DMS100, you'll have caller ID as part of your basic service. This is a perk of being on that particular brand of switch. If you're served by a 5ESS, you'll have to subscribe to caller ID separately.
Well, I have the service, but the BitSurfer, in its present state, I hear that the Motorola is putting out the BitSurfer Pro at the end of the month, which will acknowledge the caller ID.
Well, this guy knows his stuff, doesn't he?
Yes and no.
I am very impressed.
Okay, what you will get is that if you have a stock BitSurfer
right.
out of the box, you can receive caller ID for data calls if you get a lot of data calls.
I don't.
If you want to receive caller ID for voice calls,
right.
it'll actually log it, and it'll store it, which you can recall with an AT command.
Oh, no. And
that
AT command being?
You won't be able to do it. What you need to do is upgrade your firmware.
Right.
And I just got this brand new firmware today myself. And among other things, it supports caller ID for voice calls, caller ID blocking and screening, so you can reject calls from numbers you don't like.
Right.
And various other things, including asynchronous bonding, which you could use to connect at 112 or 128 kilobits to another bit surfer.
Right.
And various other features, as well as support for custom calling features, including the simulation of three-way and call waiting. Which is extremely handy.
A simulation?
Yeah, because in ISDN it's not actually known as three-way in call waiting. Call waiting is actually simulated through call appearances.
Okay.
And three-way is actually accomplished by ordering a three-party conference calling.
And where did you update, where did you get
What you
want to
do is call Motorola tech support, 800, if you have a pen, the number's 800.
Tech support number next from what?
Yeah, 221-4380. What you want to do is, ask them, tell them that you want the latest revision of the firmware for the BitSurfer. It's revision 1F.
1F.
Yeah, F is in Frank.
And they'll just send it out to me?
Yeah, they'll send it out to you if you're well versed in taking things apart and putting them back together, then you shouldn't have a problem. Otherwise, you might be concerned about breaking the BitSurfer's case because it has invisible snaps.
Right.
And it's not hard to open at all once you know how.
Once you know how.
Yeah, there's no screws. It actually snaps open.
Okay, so now I've got it open, and what do I do? Is this just a plug-in module?
There's two PROMs. What you want to do is pop out the two old ones,
right.
And bearing in mind that they're the one on the left is even, and the one on the right is odd.
Right.
Okay. And what you want to do is keep the proper orientation. Well, I guess left and right depends on which way you hold the thing up.
Right.
But you'll see a label on the two chips. One will say Z7 and one will say Z8 typically.
Right.
Keep track of which socket the Z7 one is in and make sure that when the two new ones that you get, you keep the same orientation.
Okay.
Basically, you can pop out those two old chips. They're in sockets and they're small square surface mount chips. You can pop them out with a paper clip just by leveraging it out. You pop in the two new ones, keeping the proper orientation, which isn't hard to do because there's a little slit in the corner of the chip, so you can't put them in backwards.
Good.
And you pop the lid back on, and you'll be up and running. The problem is that in documentation, if you're a tinkerer, you might be able to figure out a lot of these features. Otherwise, what they basically are a lot of the BitSurfer Pro features condensed to work on the BitSurfer. And the BitSurfer Pro is not officially out yet, and neither is the manual. Now, the only features that really differ on the BitSurfer Pro that are important is there's two phone jacks. You can plug in two telephones, not just one like on the BitSurfer. It supports multi-link PPP,
right.
Which is a more universal means of asynchronous bonding. And I use the term bonding loosely, not referring to the bonding protocol, but the ability to use multiple B channels for one connection. And supported one more thing that was important. Oh, the upgradability. You won't have to be popping the thing open all the time. You could actually upgrade it through software.
Excellent.
So these things are coming fairly soon, I hear, in only a couple of weeks. In fact, the technicians at Motorola just got the BitSurfer Pros.
Well, you know, the idea is I'm trying to avoid putting out another near $400 just to get the call ID. If I had to do that, I would have just went for an ISDN phone.
Right. Well, here you can get your BitSurfer upgraded for free if you do it yourself.
Okay. Well, that's
and it'll log the numbers.
One other thing. When I do connect to a PSI,
right,
it's giving me a connect message of connect 576.
Right.
I suppose I should be happy with that?
If you're connecting at you're using a PC or a Mac?
PC.
What you want to do is, if your computer is fairly new, you should have a higher speed serial port. You should be setting your serial port to 115.200 to get the best use of the throughput of the connection.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time, gentlemen.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, could somebody give me the number to Northern Telecom?
You have that number in your head?
Oh boy. Off the top of my head.
Well, where are they located?
You can call Northern Telecom in Valhalla, New York, upstate.
What's funny that they're not in the 800 directory.
What's the area code up there?
800. There's an 800 number.
Well, they give you.
Oh no, actually, I'm sorry. It's a 914 number.
Request, but it doesn't. It's to another company.
Right here, I found a number for Northern Telecom in Valhalla. It's 914-773-2772.
Okay. Good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
All right. I think that's probably the most advanced discussion ever to take place on ISDN on these airwaves. While the two of you were going at it, I just hope everybody else didn't fade away there. But I think he's getting to where he wants to be.
Yeah, I think once people actually get over the initial frustration of actually getting the service, and they actually get the chance to play with their hardware a little bit, I find that people are really eager to figure out this whole new service.
Yeah, but hopefully it'll be made easier for people in the future, so they don't have to worry about all this. They just know what they want in the end.
Right.
They want a fast connection, and you know we've already done the work for them to make it work just the way they want it to, have caller ID, have six call appearances, or whatever we call it.
Right.
You know, that's I guess, what we're figuring out now.
It is worth mentioning, as far as ordering vanilla ISDN service, it is no longer very complicated. The only problem is that the representatives at the average run-of-the-mill business office don't really know much about this. But 9X actually has an ISDN tech center in downtown Manhattan who is trained and specializes in taking ISDN orders. Now, I don't want to give out their number over the air without checking with them because they're extremely helpful, and I wouldn't want them to be deluged with phone calls.
Right.
But,
All right, we'll just tell you they're there.
Yeah, they're there, and...
you have to find them. But
yeah, I'm sure you
can
find them.
Ask them, and if they want their number given out, we'll give it out next week.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take some more phone calls, 212-279-3400. We don't have to just talk about ISDN, but I do want to say that I'm very impressed with all of our callers so far. We're not talking about the one thing that none of us want to talk about today.
What is that you're drinking over there?
No, I'm not going to say it. I'm drinking fruit juice, and that's all I'm going to say it is. I'm not going to say what kind it is or anything like that, and I'm not going to say that name or anything, and I hope none of our callers do either. 212-279-3400, you're listening to an extended edition of Off the Hook on WBAI. Normally we'll be on from Tuesday nights from 8 to 9 p.m. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi. After such a wonderful advanced discussion about ISDN, I hate to bring the conversation down a peg, but I was going to ask if you guys had any pointers for those of us out there who are interested but maybe don't actually know anything about ISDN yet. Are there any good references for those of us who would like
yes,
to
there
start
is.
Learning the basics?
ISDN for Dummies.
ISDN for Dummies.
No offense, but Fiber even bought this book for himself.
I bought the book basically because I wanted to review it to see if it was comprehensive and understandable to the layperson so I could recommend it to people, and I am recommending it. It's very easy to grasp, and it's very easy to read. It's a quick read, and it provides a lot of information that will be extremely useful in understanding what ISDN is, why you'd want it, and how you can order it, as well as reviews of various products that are available.
If you read that book, I think you'll be in much better shape.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Take care.
Good night.
I should read that book, shouldn't I?
I think you should. Yeah. Right. I think everyone should.
Yeah. Of all the Dummy series, I think that's probably one of the most
It should be in
helpful.
The drawers of every night table at every hotel.
Well, yeah, it'll certainly beat what's there now. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this is another ISDN question. I live in New Jersey.
Yeah?
And I hear with Bell Atlantic it's a lot easier to get the service or something like that. But the question I want to know is there any local providers in New Jersey? And also, I would like to be able to use both channels.
Okay.
Hmm.
What can you tell him?
I don't know about really any local providers. I know about the national providers. I mean, all the major providers are, well, most of them that offer ISDN obviously cover New Jersey.
I think Panix is in New Jersey.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Although Panix doesn't have ISDN yet.
Yeah. Do they have a local access number, or would it be like a long-distance call?
Where are you in New Jersey?
In Central Jersey, I guess, Westfield.
201?
Excuse me?
Are you in 201?
908.
I'm not really sure what the calling patterns are over there. You'd have to check. You know, if you call a system like Panix, see if they have a dial-up in your area, if it's a local call for you. Otherwise, it's not really a secret. I'm sure there is a service in your area. What city are you near?
As far as a big city or?
Yeah, what's the biggest city you're near? Newark or
Hoboken? Newark, yeah.
Okay, so look for something. Is Newark a local call for you?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you need a city that's in your local calling area. Are there any?
I'm not sure.
Okay, well, you need to find out about that. That's the most important thing.
There are providers here, but I don't know if any have ISDN.
Well, they will if you call them and pester them to have it, you know, because ISDN is the future. We've known that for a while, but it's only this year that we started actually doing something.
Do you have net access right now?
Well, I'm a consultant, so I have it at my job.
Well, what you might want to do is, do you have a Usenet access on your net? Can you read Newsgroup?
Yeah.
Oh, the easiest thing you could do is post a message on the Newsgroup comp.dcom.isdn.
Okay.
And if you post a message asking about service providers in Jersey that have ISDN, you'll definitely get responses.
Yeah, you'll get them fast and furious.
Yeah.
All right?
Also, my job has, I have an ISD phone at my job, and it has like 8 lines coming in, but they're like, it's kind of like it has buttons for each line.
Right.
Was it a Rome phone?
It's AT&T.
Oh. Was that Meridian?
No, AT&T. Yeah. Was it one of the 8520s, or is it an older one?
I'm not sure the model number. Pretty big. It's got like several soft touch buttons on it.
Is it black or white?
It's kind of like brown.
Oh,
brown.
Caller ID that comes up when people call you.
I think that's one of the newer ones. I think it's the 8500 series.
Do you get caller ID for outside calls or just inside calls?
Yeah, outside. When it's inside, I actually see the person's name.
Wow. What you will do, you'll see people's names soon when caller name service comes
around. Yeah, caller name delivery, sure.
The outside lines, I see them too. So.
Uh-huh. All right, well, thanks for the call.
One other question. What's between BRI and PRI? And I'll hang up.
Okay. BRI and PRI.
BRI is what 9X terms as Basic Exchange Service. BRI actually stands for Basic Rate ISDN and is basically what a normal subscriber would order, not a business. It's more geared towards residences. You get 2 B channels, no frills. A PRI is actually ISDN provided over a T1 line. T1 line being approximately 1.5 million bits per second bandwidth, and it actually provides 23 B channels, and a T1 obviously, for people out there that are aware, actually has 24 channels, the 24th being used for signaling as your D channel, and that's used for usually corporate high volume ISDN service, and is obviously more expensive.
Okay. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I'm actually calling concerning a couple of things. First of all, thank God you guys are on the air. Second of all, I'm a service provider in New Jersey.
Oh.
And actually, we're just going to start doing ISDN.
This is incredible. Wow. So you're a service provider in New Jersey, and you're about to provide ISDN. What's the name of your service?
We're Crusoe.net, and we're in the 201 area code.
How do you spell that?
CRUSOE.net.
Okay.
Like Robinson.
Yep, you got it.
All right.
Okay, basically, I was listening to your conversation earlier about Centrix, et cetera, and I wanted to know, since we're ordering our PRI right now anyway, are there any special features I should look for on it?
Because
they're going to give us a laundry list of order what you want on your PRI. And
yeah, the thing is,
to get the best service.
If you want to get it as quickly as possible, it might not be a great idea to order Centrix right off the bat. It's something you could always order later.
Okay.
And I think that right now you should just be concerned with getting set up as quickly as possible, in which case you basically want a vanilla PRI.
Okay.
And obviously you want to, if I were you, I would want to have a directory number, at least as many directory numbers as B channels, in which case it would be 23.
Yeah, we're getting that.
Yeah. But other than that, you shouldn't have to worry about anything. Obviously, what you should do, depending on what switch you're serviced by, is make sure that you have audio or speech bearer capability available on your B channels.
Okay.
So that subscribers can connect on a speech or an audio call at 56 kilobits.
Okay, and that's what you guys were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you'll get a lot more customers that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of happy people.
A lot of happy customers.
Yeah.
All right, good luck. Let us know how you do.
Okay, the other question I have for you is what's your feelings on Java and eyeing up? I just don't know what, you know, I haven't heard anything about this yet.
Well, it hasn't really exploded yet. But,
no, I don't suppose it has.
No, but as far as Java goes, I would expect to see and hear a lot more about Hot Java once the newer version of Netscape comes out, Netscape 2.0, which is supposed to have Hot Java support. And I think once that happens, you'll see a lot more organized effort in developing Java, you know, web-based Java applications.
For the benefit of our listeners who have no idea what Hot Java is.
Hot Java is basically a really advanced web presentation language as well as browser that was developed at Sun Microsystems in California. And Hot Java goes well above and beyond what a typical web page can do now, which is basically an over-glorified magazine page. Hot Java brings various things like animation and all kinds of really powerful tools in the hands of web developers, simply because it's not just taking a page and marking it up and making it, you know, it's basically an actual programming language that allows people to do really powerful and creative things and artistic things.
Okay. Let's take a few more calls. Good evening. You're on the air.
On the air?
Yes, you are. Do you want to be on the air? Okay. Well, you're no longer on the air. There you go. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. Yes, you're on the air. Okay, you're off the air now, too. What's with people out there? What's going on?
I don't know.
It's like they're being beeped with our number or something, and they think that they're supposed to be talking to somebody. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, it's Pam, guys. I'm calling with more information on 800 number direct to England.
Oh, I wonder if we still have time for that. Okay, well, let's see if we do. What do you got?
Well, I'll give you the short, sweet version. British Telecom call direct is 1-800-445-5667, but unfortunately they won't allow you to call 891 or 336. No.
Oh, you've already checked into that?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, that's been great. You've done all our work for us.
I tried.
Now, they said that even with the right kind of card or
yeah, they didn't care. They will not bill anything to an 8. They won't allow a call to go through to 891 or 336.
Okay. Well, hopefully our listener is out there and he's heard the bad news.
Yeah, and AT&T really couldn't find UK Direct or anything like that. So this was the best they could do. I don't know if that's the number.
No, that's it.
Yeah.
That's definitely it.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Good night.
Take care. All right, well, that's an indication of VAI listeners coming through. I think we have time for one more call. Good evening, you're on.
Yes, could you tell me if there's any sites for finding information on Bernie S.'s case? Because I'm interested in presenting it in a law class.
Uh-huh.
You know, just with fellow students for discussion.
Right.
You know, a listener called earlier and asked about maybe you had tapes of the show. I'm wondering if there's any hard information on the net. Or
yeah, in fact, I'm very glad you mentioned that because I forgot to mention it before. If you finger Bernie S, B-E-R-N-I-E-S, at 2600.com, it'll give you all the information, all the updated information on his case. If you email that address, you'll be sending him a letter that will be forwarded to him in prison, which hopefully he won't be in past next week. We have the same service set up for Kevin Mitnick. The address there is kmitnick, K-M-I-T-N-I-C-K, at 2600.com. Okay?
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. And also, this reminder, there's a 2600 meeting this Friday coming up at the CityCorps Center, right there in the lobby by the payphones, where you can meet and talk with computer hackers and learn all kinds of things like this. And who knows, maybe somebody will bring a BitSurfer with them, and you can see what that looks like. Anyway, that's going to do it for us on this, our first Tuesday night of the Expanded Edition. We'll be back again next Tuesday from 8 to 9 o'clock. So hopefully we'll hear from most of you then and keep in touch. It's Emmanuel Goldstein for Fiber Optic and everybody else. Have a good night. The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get my brush.
TREATIBEUNITY. 'Cause I said so. We smooth like Jerry Bledsoe. All other talk radio is dead, so better get a move on. Put Jeannie Hopper and Jay Smooth on to help get your groove on. We got ill retorts and contact sports for all sorts of the conservative agenda's cohorts. So dig a ditch for Newt Gingrich. A Republican hero ain't nothing but a sandwich. Better leave plenty of room for Rush Limbaugh. Oh, come now, why you're so dumb now? Put a burn on Howard Stern. You can keep robbing quivers, giving knuckleheads the shivers. Creative unity delivers. You can call us evil or unbelievable. CUC is the illest. CUC is the illest. CUC is the illest. Illest, the Creative Unity Collective Show, alternating Friday nights from midnight to 3 on listener sponsored WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, boy. And if you don't know, now you know, you know, you know.
Hello, this is Sandra Cisneros, author of The House on Mango Street, and this is listener sponsored radio 99.5 FM. WBAI, New York.